Husker Doc Talk podcast is presented by the Remington Trophy. The award is given annually to the nation's top center. Now in its 20th year, the Remington Trophy winner will be announced at the ESPN College Football Awards show in December. He will be honored at the Remington Trophy Celebration Dinner Saturday, January 18th, 2020 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. Want another reason to attend? How about the Ford Legends Award winner? For the first time ever, this award is going to a past Remington Award winner, former Husker Dominic Raiola. Raiola is the first ever Remington Award winner and went on to play his entire NFL career for the Detroit Lions. He retired in 2014. The Remington Trophy celebration benefits the Boomer Esiason Foundation and the fight against cystic fibrosis. For more information, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. The beer we drink on this podcast is provided by the Infusion Brewing Company. Thursday, November 7th, is International Stout Day. This day is for all the stout lovers out there, and Infusion Brewing will have Max's Addiction Toffee Bar Milk Stout and their 5th Anniversary Stout for $4 all day long. Bingo and Benson starts at 7, and it's free to play with a beverage purchase. They have half-price growler fills at the Southwest Tap Room all day long. Limit 2 per person with a pint purchase. For more information, go to infusionbrewing.com. A little later on Ticket Talk, Jessica from Ticket Express tells us it's time to start thinking about the holidays. What's the perfect stocking stuffer? Not tickets, but a Ticket Express gift card. Details at TicketExpress.com. Okay, it snowed today. It freaking snowed today. Time to bundle up. Game day or not, a lot of you like to wear red all year long. And the only place to buy red in the entire state? Husker Hounds. Let Husker Hounds get you bundled up. Fall and winter fashions arriving daily, 3 locations in Omaha or online at HuskerHounds.com. Husker Max distributes this podcast. Husker Max is the number one website for the latest Husker news. You get fresh links, original content, message boards, and more. HuskerMax.com. This is a reminder that you can always send us questions by email, doctalksports@gmail.com. Also, follow Dr. Rob on Twitter, @DocTalkSports. No matter where you find us, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, or right here on Podbean, make sure to take time to give us a like. If you are feeling extra generous, throw in a written review, please, because the more you're talking about us, the more people will find us. This is the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy, 2019, episode 20. Dr. Rob, we have so much to cover tonight. And it may not even be football related. Who knows where this thing is going to go? Because
we're going to go back to virgin births and aliens again, aren't we?
Well, we might as well, right? I think people are like, can you guys talk about the virgin birth again?
I think we probably had more listens from that damn podcast.
Well, I do know this, that we had more complaints about the podcast than we ever did before. And I know when you're starting to make people a little bit mad is that when you're starting to really make traction and get
there
more listeners.
Go.
And we do have to thank Dave Remington, because without Dave,
he didn't shit can us.
Having a fully understanding big heart and letting us, he never tells us really what to say. He doesn't. He's never really said, hey, guys, tone it down.
He did tell us knock off the F-bombs.
He did, but then I think he
was... A couple years ago.
He was met with a little pushback, and the fans said, no, we need to hear the F-word a lot more on this podcast. That's why we tune into this podcast.
Well, the way Nebraska's played like the last 5 years.
Yeah, and it's not getting any better. So I don't even want to talk about the Indiana game. I don't. I don't even want to talk about the upcoming game, because it doesn't mean anything.
Damn.
Well, we'll get to it. I understand that. By the way, we're drinking next Thursday, November 7th.
Yes, we are drinking.
Is International Stout Day at...
Oh, there we go.
At Infusion Brewing Company. I talked about it in the open real quick.
International Stout Day just at Infusion Brewing.
I don't know if it's International Stout Day all across the country, but they're calling it that at
okay.
And so we are drinking Max's Addiction, which is the milk stout coffee... Toffee bar, Heath bar tasting beer.
This is basically, if you could take a really big, heavy, punch in the face cup of coffee, but it's a beer.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yes. And it's really good.
Oh, it's
delicious.
Smooth.
I'm with you. You said before we started, you go, this is probably a two pinter.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it is a It is a heavy stout. I mean, if you're a hardcore stout person, this is a great one because it is. It's easy to drink. It's really, really smooth. There's a lot there.
Yeah, but it's not overpowering. It's not to the point where you're like, oh my God, I have a hard time swallowing. It's just very smooth. But it's one of those things you're going to take your time to drink this. This may take me 20, 30 minutes to drink this pint.
I'm on number two.
Because, you're a better beer drinker than I am. That's why.
It is. It's a good one. It's the thing I like about it, it's not super sweet. Sometimes you get some of those really heavy stouts, and they're either just ungodly strong. You feel like you might as well just be drinking a bottle of Jack Daniels, or they're just ungodly sweet. And this one kind of hits it in the middle, which is nice.
All right, let's jump right in. Les Miles at Kansas. Fired his offensive coordinator a couple weeks ago. Last year, PJ Fleck fired assistant coaches in the middle of the season and moved forward. I'm not saying Scott Frost fire coaches right now, but do you believe Scott Frost has no choice but at the end of the season to do a full evaluation and really reevaluate his loyalty to these guys and really say who can coach Big Ten football?
I do, and I part of it, though, is that I'm sitting here looking at it and – God, I had a little, I mean, there was myself and a handful of other Twitter personalities, local Twitter personalities, going back and forth about the whole jumping on the bandwagon of blame Mike Riley. And I'm sitting here going like, God, I was on that bandwagon 3 years ago. I mean, it's just at the time I'm sitting there going like, recruiting sucks. And then Frost and his staff come in and I talk to some people down at the university and you gained a lot of insight about what the way Mike Riley recruited. And you're like, oh, my God, this guy set the program back 3-4 years. And it's I thought that a couple of years ago.
I get that, Rob. But so still, fundamentally, the other day against Indiana was the
wake-up
call.
A disaster, which I find it weird because, I mean, let's call a spade. We're talking about Chenander here, I think.
Yes, we are.
So we're talking about the defense. He's an Iowa guy.
I know. You guys hired Bobby Diaco before that, and you bring in Chenander now.
What is it with guys who leave Iowa, become defensive coaches, and the guy that just, I don't know what, they're about as non-Big Ten thinking guys as you can get.
You remember when Scott Frost was hired, you and I sat here and I said, I have major reservations about the way Central Florida played defense. And they gave up a lot of yards, a lot of points.
And I don't necessarily disagree with that. They had huge numbers of big plays down there. Their turnovers, the interceptions, fumbles caused, the number of sacks, tackles for losses were huge. I mean, it was a big-time gambling defense. But these guys aren't even gambling right now. I mean, I'm sitting there watching, okay, you're getting zero pass rush from your front three, your front four. You got to bring a linebacker. I mean, you're getting picked apart in the defensive secondary left and right. If you're already getting picked apart in the secondary, does it really matter if you bring another rusher? Start blitzing guys. I mean, you're getting killed without blitzing them. You might as well give it a try. Do something to get some pressure on the quarterback.
I mean, Scott took some heat publicly for the way he reacted and maybe – blame the players more than the coaching staff and saying not playing hard enough. I think it's not – that doesn't look good because
it's not, but I mean from a former player standpoint watching those guys play, there's myself and a lot of former players who look at that and think, you know what, you can have the best coaching staff on the planet. At some point, you got to go out there and strap it up and play the damn game. And these guys just aren't.
Isn't that coaching, though? Doesn't coaching get you ready for the game?
To a fair degree, but I mean, God, at some point, you got to have the – I mean, it's kind of like Barry Switzer and what was his line about Joes? I'm totally blanking here.
Jimmy's and Joe –
Yeah. So you got to have the guys who can play the game, and there's just not a lot on that roster. Again, we kind of get sucked into this mindset that we've got some good players down there. that we've got what we need to be competitive and win. Okay, let's be clear. Just because guys are starting for Nebraska doesn't necessarily mean they're that good. It may be nothing other than the fact that's all we've got. I mean, a couple of the guys on Twitter, I think Dan Hoppen was one, pointed out the fact that I think it was that there's almost zero contributors from, I think it's the 2016 recruiting class. The only guy from that class that's actually played, that plays consistently, is Hymus. I mean, they've essentially got one guy out of an entire recruiting class that's contributing.
But you understand the pattern we have here. When Bill Callahan got here, they blamed Frank Solich. When Bo Pelini got here, they blamed Bill Callahan. When
I was looking at the situation, even when Callahan was here, there was things I blamed Callahan for that I didn't like. I thought he was an outstanding, the staff were outstanding recruiters, horrible developers of that talent. I thought Pelini was actually an okay coach. I was a long time, not blamer of Callahan, but I was a little bit of a Pelini apologist, because I actually thought then, and I think so now, that he's actually not a half bad coach. I really do. I think his problem is that he freaking hated the media with a passion, and football fans were a close second. I mean, he's a purist. He loves players, and he loves coaches, and he loves coaching players. And outside of that, that's about it. That was his biggest fault. I never blamed Callahan for things I don't think he deserved. I blame Steve Peterson for a lot. But I thought Callahan was an outstanding recruiter. I don't think he's a great coach. Yes, I understand. He's running the Redskins right now. I get it. I doubt he's going to be he's not going to be a long-term coach for the Redskins.
But one thing Bill Callahan was guilty of was blind loyalty to Kevin Cosgrove. Many people thought,
God, all coaches are like that too. Well, I shouldn't say that. Riley fired Mark Banker and brought in Diaco.
Bo Pelini got rid of Sean Watson, but he was forced to take Sean Watson. I'm just saying, blind loyalty can be dangerous, because this is a business; it's not personal, that's a fact. And when Scott Frost brought all his assistant coaches, I thought, whoa, hold on here. This is a completely different game. The Big Ten is a different style league. And I think they're getting not just outplayed, I think they're getting outcoached in a lot of cases.
Well, and I worry about that a little bit, even with Frost's offense. And I mean, you can make the argument that it's too much of a wide open spread type offense that he ran at Central Florida that worked there. And against the Big Ten, it's maybe not going to work as well. Now, you've got isolated examples like that Peach Bowl game against Auburn. People may disagree with me on this. I'm convinced, and I firmly believe this, the SEC is nothing other than the Big Ten with a lot more speed and better athletes on the whole.
And they have a lot of speed. Watch the LSUs, the Alabamas, and
they do. When you look at them, what do all of the really good SEC teams, what do? They play great defense. They've got monstrous bodies on both sides of the ball, huge offensive lines, and really, really good running games. Okay. When those SEC teams are running the ball, and they're running it at levels that people truly have trouble stopping it, that's when the SEC's rolling.
Let me ask you this. We've done an evaluation of every position throughout this year. Let's go through the coaching staff. If you were at the end of the season going to reevaluate and say, okay, I need to move on, you get a stay, let's do that here. Eric, let's start with Eric. I mean, Scott Frost isn't going anywhere. He's the CEO. He gets 5 to 7 years to do whatever he wants to do. I get that. But you have to make adjustments as you go along. Eric Chenander, do you keep him around, or what do you say to him during the offseason?
I want to see a change to the 4-3. And I want to see a defense that is impossible to run against.
Because Indiana ran right through it, buddy.
They passed right through. They didn't run through
it.
Yeah,
but they had success. It was pretty balanced, actually.
The passing game was what gutted Nebraska.
I would agree with you.
That was the thing that really hurt. That really hurt Nebraska was the inability to stop the passing game. I thought there were a few second half runs that got set up because of the success in the passing game, but I think they got gutted by the passing game. So I think you've got to be able to stop the run. And if you can do that, you're going to have a chance. And then you got to get a pass rush going. And we've got neither of those. You got a year to fix that.
Yeah, Peyton Ramsey went for, 351 yards. The team as a whole ran for 120-plus.
Yeah, which is okay.
Yeah.
It's not great. I mean, it's not like Ohio State gutting us for 300.
So what other positions are you looking at? What are you not satisfied with? Do you think Chenander is here next year?
I think they make no changes.
Boy, that's dangerous. That's dangerous.
And I say that because I think there's going to be this overwhelming sense, and I don't know if I've got a good argument against it. I'm not saying I'm sold on that coaching staff across the board, because I'm not. But I think there's a lot of people who are saying, God, I still think the talent level is a monstrous, monstrous question mark. And you've got these big roster holes. And when I say talent, you've got these roster holes, and amongst the places where you don't have a roster hole, you still have a lack of overall talent. Until they can get that talent level shored up a bit, I guess that's what I'm kind of curious to see.
What position on defense are you impressed with the most?
Whew. Well, after that Indiana game, none. That was just a sad performance. I mean, that game I thought was pretty anomalous across the board. God, that's a tough one. The position JoJo Doman plays, sort of that hybrid outside linebacker safety, basically is like a hybrid nickel position where it's sort of a small, fast outside linebacker, big run-stopping safety. I'm pretty impressed with him, actually, because you see him covering wide receivers. You see him run-stopping against running backs. The guy's a player. So I actually really liked him. I think he's a kid who I'm actually fairly impressed with. I don't know if that has anything to do with coaching. I think that's just him, though.
I mean, was Barrett Rood ready to be a Big Ten position coach?
I think linebackers have done okay.
But you know what I'm saying, right? Yeah. There was little experience in the coaching world there.
True.
Barrett's a great guy, one of the nicest guys I know.
I think he's smarter than hell. I really do. I'm not sure I got a problem with him at all. Defensive backs, there's some guys that I just didn't see a jump from last year to this year that I would have liked to have seen more development with that we haven't seen. Guys like Boodle, I feel like he's kind of stagnated since last year.
In your time in Nebraska, did Tom Osborne ever fire anybody while you were there? Kevin Steele left. I think he went to the NFL at that time.
Yeah, that was after the 94 season, and that was because you had the expansion franchises with Jacksonville and Carolina, and he left to go to Carolina, so he had an NFL job.
Did anybody in your entire career get let go or leave?
No, but by the time I got there, Kevin Steele was actually the new kid on the block. So he hit the door. Oh, boy. Actually, my freshman year, when I was a true freshman, that actually might have been Steele's first year.
Okay.
I think it was either 89 or 90 was Steele's first year. But the rest of that coaching staff was pretty well established by that point. Dan Young had been there for quite a while. Tenneper had been there for over a decade. Ron Brown, George Darlington had been there forever.
What was the disaster? Is that 91 Georgia Tech or was that 92 where you guys said things have got to change?
That was that was 1990 season. So okay. We got Colorado, big come from behind win in Link, and that was where Eric Bieniemy went nuts in the fourth quarter. So you had a big come from behind loss to Colorado during the regular season. Oklahoma just nuked us from the get-go down in Norman day after Thanksgiving. And then bowl game was against Georgia Tech, where, again, they just blew up. Now, the scary thing is, when you think about it, those were like 45-21 losses. And then that time period, that was considered just an absolutely brutal beatdown. But yeah, that was when you kind of started seeing some changes in sort of a mindset, because we'd had these losses to Florida State. You'd lost after the 88 season, 89 Orange Bowl to Miami. You had the blowout loss to Georgia Tech, which they were actually built like a classic SEC team. I know they're ACC, but they were one of those teams that was just kind of big and fast all over. We ran a 3-4/5-2 defense, true nose guard. We called them defensive tackles, but in reality, defensive ends. And then we called them defensive ends, but in reality, they were the outside linebackers. That was like Broderick Thomas. But that's where you saw Trev Alberts, Broderick Thomas, Travis Hill, all of those guys lining up at Mike Kroll. Those guys were outside linebackers. And then you had two middle linebackers. And we ran a little bit of a four-man front, I think, in 90 and 91. But it was our dime defense. That was like the nickel or the dime. And one of the three linebackers in that 4-3 was usually like a big safety. So the thing that stuck out is, one, we put it in as essentially kind of a pass-stopping defense. That's the ironic thing about it, is that defense was originally designed to – that was our nickel and dime front that we used on passing downs. And the coaching staff put it in because it was a whole bunch of speed guys. You got two big interior linemen, two outside linebackers as your defensive ends. I mean, we were using 6'3", 6'4", 215, 220-pound outside backers as our rush ends. And then you had three fast guys who could run at linebacker to cover tight ends and running backs coming out of the backfield. So it was a passing defense. Let's get a rush on the passer, and let's get all these fast guys out there to cover passes. And lo and behold, they realized, this works really well against the run. Every time the team runs against it, we shut them down. So it stuck. And after a year, year and a half, they just used it more, used it more and more and more as time went on until it became the base defense.
But that was, after that Georgia Tech loss, that was like the low point, right? I mean, that was like something had to change.
I think it was. But that was also, I think Osborne kind of was toying with either retiring or going someplace else too. I mean, he had offers.
Do you think he really?
Oh, I know he toyed with the idea of it. Just kind of wondered if maybe his message
and that happens.
Yeah, you wonder if maybe the message is getting stale and different change of pace, different location would kind of freshen things up a bit.
You know, what we saw Scott do after the game was frustration. I mean, calling players out, it's as mad as I think I've seen him. Is that starting to carry over? Are we seeing now players react to coach? Is the culture not where we think it is?
Oh, it's not where you want it to be. But think about the fact we were talking about during year three of the Riley era, there was still a lot of talk about how there was this really hardcore Pelini contingent on the team in 2016. I mean, in 2017, in Riley's last year, There was a lot of talk about this Pelini contingent of guys that had never bought in and never were going to buy in. And that was year three of Mike Riley's tenure. And there was reporters I talked to. There was people who worked within the athletic department who said it tore the team apart. Like it, that they lost some of those games early on in 2017 because of that rift. You had Pelini guys and you had Mike Riley guys. And I think you're still seeing a little bit of that now, that there's guys who are just, hey, I didn't come here to go through the type of workload Frost wants and to do these kind of practices and to have to stick with these kind of expectations. I mean, people didn't care within Riley's staff and administration. If you lost a game, it was like, well, boy, gee, that sucks. But you know what? I bet the lads learned something. I mean, it's just, That was what it was like then. I think there's still a lot of players who I think it's going to be tough for guys to overcome that shy of graduating and moving on.
I might poke fun because it's fun to get under people's skin, but I never make fun of expectations, especially when they're high, because I make fun of a lot of my I host the Iowa Hawkeye Call-In Show. I have really high expectations, right? And fans get mad at me and say I shouldn't have those expectations. I think the difference here, you have to temper them and realize that I think Scott was his own worst enemy. And what I mean by that is he went undefeated year two at Central Florida, and they thought it's not his fault.
Yeah.
The legend of Scott Frost was his own worst enemy because people thought, well, that's automatically going to happen. And I think deep down people thought,
even the realists, you're sitting there going, okay, listen, it's a different place, different talent levels. I guarantee even those people are going like, I bet we're going to be pretty good this year.
Yeah. But I think what happens is I think Scott buys into it. I mean, when Bill Moos said, Bill Moos must be one smart MF-er, man, because when he said six wins.
Let's get to six.
Yeah. And I think Scott was offended by that. I think a lot of people were. I think Bill's a lot smarter than we all are, and he's
been around
that.
The block a few years.
He has been around the block, and he gets it. But I think sometimes you have this amazing amount of confidence. You think that success is going to follow you no matter where you go, and that's great, right? I mean, because no winner thinks I'm going to lose. Nobody does. But I think everybody that I knew thought this was it. And I bought into it. I picked Nebraska to win the Big Ten West. I'm an idiot.
I wasn't quite sold on us getting past,
I know you
Wisconsin,
weren't.
Even Iowa. I didn't think it'd be this bad, though, which the potential's there to be a lot better than Nebraska is. Nebraska should not have lost to Colorado.
No.
Nebraska should not have lost to Indiana.
Offensively, look at the numbers. Even with Noah Bedrow and Luke McCaffrey, the numbers were good enough to beat Indiana.
Do you know what scares me?
What?
I think I like him more than Martinez.
Bedrow or McCaffrey or both?
Both.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Go into why.
They make a decision. They pull the trigger and go. I think Bedrow's a better passer than Martinez.
14 to 16, 201 yards.
Both of them threw the ball really well. McCaffrey might be a better runner. That guy's slick. I mean, he's...
So do we have a quarterback controversy now?
I don't think Frost will treat it that way, but in my mind, I'm sitting here going like, God, I want to see more of both of those guys.
I mean, I think Noah struggled at, what, Minnesota?
Everybody struggled at Minnesota.
Yeah, everybody did, right? That's interesting that you would say that, because I'm sure there's a lot of people saying, oh, you got to get Martinez back. But I don't think they really missed that
I think when Martinez was in, what games? So with Martinez.
You're going to make me do like homework right here?
No, but I mean, Nebraska's got four wins.
Yes.
And all four were with Martinez. I guess I'm counting the Northwestern game in which he got hurt.
By the way, thank God you're not playing Illinois right now. That team's playing pretty good football.
They are. They've got some okay athletes. I just think Lovie Smith's had those guys under coach for his whole tenure.
I think Lovie must have gone into a room and said, here's the deal. I'm getting fired if you don't pull your heads out of your asses and start winning.
Probably.
Yes.
I think he's probably been trying to coach him like an NFL coach.
And can't that do
shit,
that.
Shit just doesn't fly in college and vice versa. Yeah, I'll still go to my grave saying Pete Carroll's really the only guy I've ever seen who can coach in either league and do it with a degree of success. I get the fact that the four games we won were with Martinez, but I almost feel like it was almost in spite of him. It's just he's a different guy this year. It's just that decisiveness, and then you see these young guys come in, and it's like, oh, my God, these guys make a decision, and they make it quick. And I like seeing that.
But don't you think – play devil's advocate here, right? These young guys come in, their second teamers are going, I got to make the most of my opportunity. If I don't just play loosey-goosey, go out, have fun, try to not take myself too seriously, Adrian Martinez gets that 1 year under his belt and goes, okay, I've got to protect myself.
There's probably a mental aspect to it. I don't deny that. I just – But if that keeps him from playing, then, or playing to his potential, that makes him lesser of a player.
So what I hear you saying in the first half of this podcast is that Eric Shenander won't lose his job, but maybe should, and now we got a quarterback controversy at Nebraska.
I was really impressed with how those two guys looked against Indiana. Now, don't get me wrong, Indiana's defense sucks.
Yeah, and so does Purdue, and we'll get into Purdue a little bit later on. So,
yeah, Purdue's bad on both sides.
Both sides of the football, but they talk
about
injuries.
Watch this. Watch this. Will be the game Rondell Moore comes back. We're screwed.
Oh man. So, well, speaking of Purdue, we'll talk a little about Purdue, and we'll also take some listener emails because we got lots of them just unsolicited throughout the week, which I like. When we come back up next. Ticket Talk on the Husker.com podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. You know, Jessica, last week we brought up the basketball tickets in Hoyball. I'm starting to think those tickets are looking a lot more attractive after last weekend's game against Indiana. People are really looking forward to basketball now.
They absolutely are, because that team is currently undefeated with plenty to look forward to.
Look at you putting the positive spin on everything. That's what I like about you. You find the positive in everything.
It makes life a lot better.
It really does, but you know, you can't really just sulk in a loss for very long. You got to, you know, pick your feet back up and just move along and try not to become too emotionally involved. But you know, as we start looking farther down the road, what's coming up? You know, we've always talked about basketball, we've talked about volleyball, we've talked a little bit about basketball. You know, is there anything else coming up in Lincoln or even Omaha event wise that people need to keep their eye on?
You know, something to start keeping your eye on right now is Christmas is, you know, knocking on the door. It's around the corner, and Mannheim Steamroller is coming back to the Orpheum as they do each year. And this year they're performing their first Christmas album, and those performances are great. And they perform them for 2 days, a Saturday and a Sunday, and they're great for the entire family.
You know, I never thought of this. You brought up Christmas. Now, in my family, we celebrate the Feast of St. Nicholas, which is, I believe, December 8th. We get our stocking stuffed with candies and fruits and maybe some gift certificates. Do you guys have Ticket Express gift certificates? Can you give the gift of Ticket Express to people?
You absolutely can. And, you know, as I tell people, a ticket's more than a ticket. You're really giving somebody the opportunity to build a new memory. And as you can attest, we know memories are far sweeter often than what you receive in a box.
You know, that's a good way to put it. I mean, that's an interesting spin to say you're creating a memory. But I never thought of giving like a Ticket Express ticket or gift certificate, because you're like, oh, I'm just going to buy somebody tickets for an event I think they might like. But it makes perfect sense to go, hey, I'm going to put so much on a Ticket Express gift card and say, you go to whatever event you like. That makes a lot of sense to me. I like that idea.
Absolutely. You know, and the beauty is they're good for any event nationwide. You know, so we talk a lot about Husker sports on this podcast. But, you know, if you have relatives elsewhere in the country, you can send them a Ticket Express gift card and they can use it for events that are occurring in their own backyard.
See, that's what people don't understand. If they go to TicketExpress.com, it's just not a Husker or a Creighton or a UNO website. You do have tickets. You can just put the little search bar in. You can go anywhere in the country you want to go, can't you?
Absolutely, you can. You know, we handle tickets every year to big events too, like the Kentucky Derby and the Masters, and we're getting lots of inquiries right now about the Ryder Cup. We handle a lot more than UNO and UNL and Creighton tickets.
So there you go. Your Christmas gifts are solved. You just go to Ticket Express, get a Ticket Express gift card, and everything's taken care of. I'm worried about Chad, though. I haven't talked to Chad in like a month, month and a half. Is he mad at me? Is he not? Does he not want to do this podcast anymore?
I keep him hidden in the cave. Are you kidding me? It's way better to talk to me, let's be honest.
Well, you're much better looking than he is. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, I've got that going for me, too.
All right. Well, tell Chad hi. Thanks for your time, as always. And when you need your
Absolutely.
When you need your Christmas gifts, you need your Husker tickets, your Blue Jay tickets, any tickets you need, it's TicketExpress.com. That's TicketExpress.com. Thanks, Jessica. All right, Rob. I said we weren't going to talk about the next game, but we are. Nebraska with 4 wins on the year. They need 2 more to become bowl eligible. They get Purdue this weekend on the road. Then they go at home against Wisconsin. And they go to Maryland.
If they don't beat Purdue, I don't think they get 6 wins.
Yeah, you're probably right. Beating Wisconsin and Iowa is going to be very hard. Wisconsin has the number 1 defense in the country. Iowa has the number 6 defense in the country. Iowa's offense is brutal, just absolutely brutal. But their defense will keep them in every single game. It's a nasty defense. I mean, it's one of those. I mean, Nebraska wishes it had a defense like Wisconsin and Iowa. I'm not kidding.
No, it is.
I mean, it's.
Can we get Jim Leonard in Lincoln?
What's that?
Can we get Jim Leonard to come to Lincoln?
Can you get anybody to come to? Well, no, because he's not a Frost guy. He's not a loyalty guy.
He's a Barry Alvarez guy.
Yeah, that's true. But Nebraska's at Purdue. Purdue's just got. They were talking about Brohm this today on my radio station in Des Moines. They're like, here's a guy that played Power 5 schools and didn't play any. You know, didn't go to the MAC. Didn't go to an FCS school. Played Power 5s during the non-con. You wonder if he regrets that now. His team's beat up. I mean, he's playing freshmen, sophomores, guys.
He's a little bit, honestly, there's a lot of parallel there. Because I actually think Brohm's a really, really good coach. I think he's an outstanding coach. I think he took over a program that had some guys that patched some glaring holes.
And like, I need to correct myself. They did play 1 non-Power 5 school. They got beat by Nevada 34-31 to open the season. So that's my bad.
But yeah, I think David Blau, the quarterback? Yeah. Thought he was like a 7-year starter. He was like Clayton Thorson at Northwestern. Those guys started like 5, 6, 7 years. but you had Blau there who I think you had this incredibly experienced senior quarterback. Is it Moore, the stud wide receiver? It was Rondale Moore. I could be wrong on that. He's been out injured since like day one. And it's just basically you took their best player on offense. I mean, you took Adrian Martinez, Wandale Robinson, J.D. Spielman, and Stanley Morgan, rolled into one player and removed him from the roster. He kind of did everything for him offensively. And he's gone. You don't have that experienced quarterback this year. They've had a slew, slew of injuries across the board. And so they're playing tons and tons of young players. And all of their playmakers, the guys that they were going to rely on to do something this year, all of them are injured. And it's been brutal for them. But I see a lot of parallels there because I see a team that I think has a really good coach. When I looked at, say, Purdue versus Minnesota, Purdue's the team that I looked at and thought, here's the team that's got the longer, better, long-term upside. You got this guy who's going to be a really good coach. He's going to be a great recruiter. He's going to be a program builder for them. And they're having a monstrous setback year two. And a lot of it's just they've got no depth. They graduated a lot of guys, a lot of leadership, a lot of guys who kind of were the glue for that team last year. And then injuries knocked off the rest. And I look at Nebraska and I see kind of that same parallel. A coach that I do think is going to be a great coach. He's going to be a great program builder. But God, we lost some guys last year that covered up a lot of holes with Azigbo and Morgan. And thinking about it now on the offensive line with Foster and Tanner Farmer, you lost a couple of fifth-year seniors who were major buy-in guys, a guy like Luke Gifford off that defense. If you want to know how good Luke Gifford is, I mean, she made the Dallas Cowboys roster as an undrafted free agent. That's pretty solid. And he made it injured. He was injured the last couple of weeks of training camp. So the guy was really quite good. And he was another guy that bought in. I mean, he was a full buy-in guy day one for Frost. You lose those guys, especially when those guys are fifth-year seniors. God, that leaves a glaring hole on your team. And it's hard. It's really hard to fill that. But that's what Purdue's going through.
Rondale Moore, questionable from the Nebraska game. Jeff Brohm today compared Moore to Wandale Robinson. Said they're very similar.
Yeah, they're guys. I mean, they can hurt you from a lot of different spots across the field. So, but yeah, that's – now, that being said, I mean, Frost hit the nail on the head when he said Nebraska finds new and innovative ways to lose football games. Same kind of thing here, because Purdue is – they're not as good as Indiana, and Indiana's not a very good team, and they beat us. So we can figure out a way to lose this game. I mean, that's not out of the question.
So Purdue lost at Nevada 34-31, beat Vanderbilt 42-24, lost at home to TCU 34-13, lost to Minnesota 38-31, lost at Penn State 35-7, beat Maryland 40-14, lost at Iowa 26-20. Again, Iowa's offense is brutal. Got blown out by Illinois 24-6, and now has Nebraska this weekend.
And well, and like I said, I'm not putting anything past them. When I look at anybody anymore, we found ways to lose games. I mean, turnovers, stupid penalties, inability to stop a team on 4th and freaking 7. Are you kidding me? I mean, it's mind-blowing to me the way these guys are finding ways to lose these games. And so when I look at it on paper, Nebraska should have a win. We should have beat, but on paper, we should have beat Illinois.
I was going to say, would you agree, and I'm making a big assumption here, if they were to lose this weekend, this team's checked out mentally. It's gone.
It's going to be tough. Which at that point, if I'm Frost, I'm throwing freshmen in. I'm finding all the young guys that I think want to play.
Well, especially if you haven't played them, you got the 4-game redshirt thing, right?
Yeah, which at this point, all those guys except McCaffrey, you can throw in there. So I'm sitting juniors and seniors, and I'm putting a whole bunch of freshmen in there. If you're not going to buy in, if I sense here's a guy that has even a little bit of lack of buy-in, you're riding pine. I'm putting the future in, and I'm doing it now.
All right, it's time for some listener email. We're going to start off with Jordan. Jordan says, my question for both you guys. Since it's been nearly 10 years since Nebraska left the Big 12, I was wondering if Nebraska had stayed in the Big 12, do you think Nebraska would have more success and a better overall record than being in the Big 10?
That's kind of a tough question because I often questioned offensively what Nebraska was trying to do in the Big 12. I think you had a series of very so-so offensive coordinators. Jay Norvell I liked. I mean, I thought he was a pretty bright guy. Sean Watson, I thought, good on paper, not good in practice when you actually put his offenses out there. Tim Beck, I still shudder thinking about him. I mean, just horrible, horrible decision making in my book. I thought the potential was there to have some good teams. And when you say stay in the Big 12, for some reason, I kind of feel like Pelini would still be our coach if we were still in the Big 12.
Let's look at it this way. I mean, because I happen to follow the Big 12 a lot since Iowa State's in there. I don't know you probably would have been where you were. Third, occasional second.
I mean, you're a good 9-10 win a year team.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean,
that's what he was.
Yeah. But they got rid of Pelini. I don't know if that stays up. The good thing is
you
could have had a shitty defense and made it in the Big 12. You need a good offense to make it.
Yeah, I don't think
Big 12.
Riley would have done well at all in the Big 12.
No. Not at all.
But I mean, Bill Callahan, God, Callahan had great offenses and I shouldn't say his defenses. I mean, Cosgrove's defenses were so atrocious. There were games Nebraska scored 50 points and lost.
Dude, you know who I'm
by three scores.
You know who I'm falling in love with? Chris Klieman.
Oh.
That dude can coach.
He is. So
the dude can coach.
Small world stuff. I'm drawing from family connections here. So
and if you don't know who Chris Klieman is, Chris Klieman is the new head coach at Kansas State. He was
who replaced Craig Bohl at North Dakota State.
You know what he is,
and
too?
Kept winning titles.
Do you know what Chris Klieman is?
He replaced Dan Hawkins at Boise.
Do you know who Chris Klieman is?
No.
Good Iowa boy.
Oh, for God's sake. Okay, where's he from in Iowa?
Over in Waterloo.
Oh, okay.
That's
my dad's neck in the woods up there.
I thought you would appreciate that.
I do.
All right.
Where'd he go to college?
I don't know if he went to Northern Iowa or not. I'll check while you
He strikes me as a Northern Iowa guy. No, yeah. my nephew had a recruiting trip to K-State this weekend, so got to see him wearing the purple jersey in the recruiting photos.
How was that? How was that for your brother?
Oh, my brother's pretty level-headed guy. So he's one of those, he's pretty open-minded about stuff, so... But the offensive line coach at K-State is Connor Riley, who is a two-time All-American at UNO back when UNO had football. Connor's a great guy, and he's an excellent, excellent offensive line coach. But I asked my brother forget the recruiting trip. What was the game like? I mean, it seems like Klieman's got those guys playing some good football right now. And my brother said, he goes, well, go figure. He goes, who in the Big 12 runs the ball between the tackles? I said, well, like nobody. He goes, exactly. Klieman just showed up and just shoved it down Oklahoma's throat the whole game, and they weren't quite sure how to handle it.
Can you see your nephew playing in purple?
Hey, if they give him a full ride, I can definitely see him playing in purple.
And your brother's got a pretty good relationship with him, right? Or is it somebody else
with K-State? At K-State.
Yeah.
No, great. So I don't think my brother knows Klieman real well, but he's known Connor Riley for years.
Okay. Connor Riley, by the way, an Omaha kid, played at UNO.
Yeah. I just said that. Two-time All-American at UNO.
Shit, I'm sorry.
Quit researching.
I'm sorry, because you saw me researching over here.
My brother's brother-in-law was a teammate. So brother's wife, her brother played at UNO. So
Klieman... Klieman, by the way, played at Northern Iowa.
Okay.
Then coached at Northern Iowa, was with Terry Allen at Kansas in 97.
Terry Allen.
Went to Missouri State, then went to Western Illinois, then went to Kansas, then went to Missouri State. He actually took a year off after this guy's got fired at KU, went to Missouri State with Terry Allen, went to Loras College, ended up back at Northern Iowa, then went to North Dakota State, and now at K-State.
God, that is a nomadic life.
It's horrible, isn't it?
I don't know how guys do that.
Yeah, but now he's making $2.3 million.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, you hope you land that light at the end of the tunnel at some point, or you hope you're, like those assistants, you hope you're attached to a guy who does at some point.
Morgan says, hey, Dr. Rob and Trab, not everyone is a fan of alternative uniforms, but shouldn't Herbie Husker and Little Red sport the alternate uniform when the football team does? Adidas can't afford it. By the way, I'm not big on the alternative uniforms. I actually liked Nebraska's this weekend. I thought they were pretty good.
Yeah, my wife had a great line. She said they should have gone skins after that to perform, especially the defense. Should have took them all away.
But Morgan must get this podcast pretty well, and he listens closely. He says, call me conservative, but I like a regular Runza and ones with American cheese even more. Less frequently, I enjoy the mushroom Swiss Runza. Where's your line in the sand for the Runza sandwich variety?
I'm about a 99% regular Runza, Once in a blue moon, you go with the mushroom Swiss, though.
I don't do
But
the
if I'm going mushroom Swiss, I go to Runza does a badass hamburger. They might be the, if you want to label them as fast food, Runza probably has the best fast food hamburgers in the state, hands down. But if you're going Swiss, mushroom Swiss, get the mushroom Swiss hamburger.
See, I don't know what it's called, but they have one Runza with jalapenos and stuff in it.
I don't know what that one's called either.
But I love that. I like the jalapeno. And then he said, what's the latest update for the Doc Talk beer from Infusion? We're not getting one. They got busy. And brewers are a weird breed.
I kind of wondered about that. I know. I kept thinking, God, should I mention that?
No, we're not getting
one. Should I ask about that?
Brewers are a weird bunch. And, you know, they get busy and they're artisans and they don't want to throw something together.
Well, and I wasn't gonna push too many buttons. They give us free beer, for God's sake.
Every single week we drink free beer. So
we drink a lot of beer.
So I'm not. Is there any more left, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
Can you pour me some while I read this next
question? Oh, hell yeah.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Jeff says, hey, guys, at the end of the first quarter, when Nebraska successfully ran the trick play, direct snap to Robinson. Why was that not flagged? Are O linemen not required to be down in a stance? Do they simply have to be standing at the line?
Oh,
Jesus
that was
Christ,
a disaster
Rob.
Of a pour right there.
Who the
there?
Fuck taught you how to pour a beer? It's all over my.
Damn, I just made a mess here. Sloppy.
Man, that's horrible.
I'll look it up.
So here's a – I'll take a picture and I'll tweet it out on the Doc Talk Twitter feed. But Doc just spilled beer all over.
Well, it kind of – the head kind of caught up there to a little quicker than I thought it was going to. Sorry, Travis. The – no, what were we talking about?
Okay, so Jeff says, hey, at the end of the first quarter
– No, they don't have to get down in their stance.
No, you can go run. I mean, you just can't move, right?
Yeah. Well, and they've even relaxed the rule. It used to be once your hand went down, it couldn't come back up. And now it's one of those things. With the increased like plays coming in from the sideline, the sideline audibles, guys holding up those big placards, where you'll see teams get down, O-linemen put their hands down. And then you'll see the offensive linemen completely stand back up again out of their stance. And that's not a penalty. When it used to be, if your hand touched the ground, if you brought it up off the ground, they'd call an illegal motion penalty on you. So it's in general, those rules have really loosened up, or at least the enforcement has loosened up, where I guess the spirit of the rule just really isn't there anymore.
All right, Jeff, there you go. That should answer it. Let's go to Greg in Tulsa. Dear Travis, Dr. Rob, if a player gets hurt and timeout is imposed by officials, that player cannot return until...
Oh, so did you see this at all? I don't know if
I
you
didn't.
Really...
I was... So anytime, I'm hosting a show during
okay,
this time.
Okay, so anytime... I think they had at least six times during the game, whenever Nebraska got a really good rhythm going on offense, where you could tell, ooh, they're gashing Indiana literally off of the rhythm of their offense right now. You could tell Indiana had coached their players to flop. And you'd see a guy, I mean, there was a couple of times I saw the guy just walking normally and get some signal from the sideline in between the play, and he would just go down. And they did it repeat time after time after time. Look around on Twitter. It's guys are commenting on it all over the place on Twitter.
And Adam asked this. He goes, hey, did you or any of your other teammates ever fake an injury throughout your career? Did the team encourage it?
Never. And it was never encouraged either. You never saw that happen. Although I don't think you saw a lot of... I mean, hurry-up offense was essentially end of a game. Right? I mean, the last 2 minutes of a half, last 2 minutes of the game. That was the only time you ever really saw it. The whole no-huddle offense just really wasn't used all that much. I never did see that. But, I mean, God, that was about as... And I've seen people saying, hey, you shouldn't boo at a potentially injured player. They weren't injured. You knew they weren't injured. It was purely guys flopping just to stop the rhythm of the offense.
How do you How do you throw a flag on that? Because you can't prove it, right?
That's the problem, is you can't.
Because you could say, stay down, we're going to bring the stretcher out. Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to, right?
Yeah. I mean, they could essentially, I mean, about the, now the guy, the guys have to leave for a play, but theoretically they only have to come off the field for one play and then they can be right back out there. And if it's a guy at a position where, okay, let's say this guy's an alternate starter and we got his other alternates perfectly ready to go, we'll have him do the flop. So it's not like you're going to see Ohio State have Chase Young do a flop. So you're not going to take your best player, do that, or a key player, but Indiana did it time and time again, and it was ridiculously blatant. And so the trainers would huddle around the guy, and then he'd get up and jog off the field like nothing was wrong. I mean, it was ridiculous. I gotta go double check the rules, because I think they have some rules in the NFL about it, where if you have a player who's injured in the last 2 minutes and the injury causes a stoppage of play, there's a 10-second runoff.
Unless you know it's true legitimate, right?
Yeah. I've seen guys with like Joe Theismann type injuries getting carted off. All right, we got to do the 10-second runoff now.
That's weak. Daniel says, Has there been enough evidence to start questioning if this rebuild will work? Nebraska is heading into game 9 of year 2.
There's not great evidence.
There's not.
There's not.
And that's what he's saying. Is every press conference the same? We need guys that care, that work hard, that hold each other accountable.
You know, it's one of those things where, I mean, it's sort of like, how do you prove something by a lack of something? The only proof I have is I'm looking down there going, the best players that I see on that roster right now are all freshmen and high school seniors in next year's recruiting class. I mean, that's tough for me to say, but it's true.
Tim says, do you think it hurts morale for the team that all that Scott Frost teams are offensive-minded teams? I mean, would you say this is a defensive-minded team?
No, but you got to have really good defense. And when you're, I don't know. I don't know if that's a great argument, especially when the,
that's fair,
when the alternative uniform is a fucking black shirt. It's ridiculous. It's like, if I was an offensive player, I would have literally packed a can of black spray paint and I would have spray painted that damn skull and crossbones on the side of my jersey. I'm not wearing that shit as an offensive player. And I would have insisted the other O-lineman do it too.
Wow.
Not wearing that crap. I don't care how good your defense
is. Well, because
these,
you know,
guys
what?
Aren't.
The truth is, it was embarrassing that day because there was no defense whatsoever.
Oh, it was. It was incredibly embarrassing that's how it happened, how all that played out. But even when I was down in Lincoln, I mean, it's not like we took a back seat to the black shirts in practice. I mean, I would say goal line defense, spring games. The offensive lines, when I was down there, tended to kind of, we didn't give up a whole heck of a lot to the defense.
He's Dr. Rob Zadiska. I'm Travis Justice. This is the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. If you have any questions for us, make sure to send us an email, doctalksports@gmail.com. That's doctalksports@gmail.com. You can also reach out to Dr. Rob on Twitter @DocTalkSports. Again, @DocTalkSports. We've had a lot of people writing in, Rob, and it's pretty cool because we had people come in for the Indiana game. They live in Indiana. They went to Infusion Brewing.
Nice.
They got their tickets from Ticket Express. They listened to this podcast religiously. So,
and then they saw a horrible game.
Well, but, you know, one guy did bring an Indiana fan with him. So half of that group left home happy, right? I mean, that's but, yeah. So make sure to just, you know, go to the Remington Trophy celebration. And I don't know if you heard this in the open. Ford Legends Award winner this year?
Yes.
Dominic Raiola.
No. Well, yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, so the first ever winner of the Remington Trophy is going to be the Ford Legends Award winner. Of course, played his entire career at the Detroit Lions. Lives in Phoenix now. I was just on Wikipedia. He bought a $3.1 million house a couple years ago in
Phoenix.
That's
on Wikipedia?
Yeah, it's on Wikipedia. You can find anything on Wikipedia. Do you have a Wikipedia page?
I do. You can pull it up right now.
I don't even have a Wikipedia page.
It's like about four lines, but I got a Wikipedia page.
Oh, nice. Nice. But yeah, so Dominic Raiola is going to come back. So there's a
nice guy. I always like
there
Dominic.
There is a good enough reason right there to buy your tickets to the Remington Trophy celebration. Go to remingtontrophy.com. That's remingtontrophy.com. And Rob and I, listen, whether we like it or not, Rob and I are kind of professional fundraiser goer to we go to a lot of fundraisers.
Gotcha.
Well, we drink a lot of beer.
I drink beer at those fundraisers.
But we how many fundraisers do we go to a year? We go to a few.
Quite a few.
And we can fully say that this is one of our favorite events.
Oh, if you're a football fan and a football history fan, oh, great event. A lot of NFL guys, a lot of college greats. The speaker's always good. The entertainment's always good. The Ford Legends Award winner's always good. In the sense that you're seeing some of these guys are truly legendary athletes and personalities. It's a fun event.
And so RemingtonTrophy.com. Check it out. We'll be back next week with another Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.